A displacement of the assemblage point beyond the midline of the cocoon of man makes the entire world we know vanish from our view in one instant, as if it had been erased. For the stability, the substantiality that seems to belong to our perceivable world is just the force of alignment. Certain emanations are routinely aligned because of the fixation of the assemblage point on one specific spot. That is all there is to our world. The soundness of the world is not the mirage. The mirage is the fixation of the assemblage point on any spot. When seers shift their assemblage points, they are not confronted with an illusion. They are confronted with another world. That new world is as real as the one we are watching now, but the new fixation of their assemblage points, which produces that new world, is as much of a mirage as the old fixation. There is probably no way to soothe anyone who realizes the journey of the dreaming body. You say that you feel terribly sad. Who cares about sadness? Think only of the mysteries. Mystery is all that matters. We are living beings. We have to die and relinquish our awareness. But if we could change just a tinge of that, what mysteries must await us? What mysteries? Warriors end their training when they are capable of breaking the barrier of perception, unaided, starting from a normal state of awareness. The only force that can temporarily cancel out alignment is alignment. By intending a new position of your assemblage point, and by intending to keep it fixed there long enough, you will assemble another of the seven worlds and escape this one. You will be separated from your normal world by the very barrier that you have broken, the barrier of perception. But you will remain. That is the mystery. The wall of fog, the plain with yellow dunes, the world of the apparitions, are all lateral alignments that our assemblage points make as they approach a crucial position. To assemble other worlds is not only a matter of practice, but a matter of intent. And it isn't merely an exercise of bouncing out of those worlds like being pulled by a rubber band. You see, a seer has to be daring. Once you break the barrier of perception, you don't have to come back to the same place in the world. See what I mean? For warriors, the danger of assembling other worlds is that those worlds are as possessive as our world. The force of alignment is such that once the assemblage point breaks away from its normal position, it becomes fixed at other positions by other alignments, and warriors run the risk of getting stranded in inconceivable aloneness. Breaking the barrier of perception is the culmination of everything seers do. From the moment that barrier is broken, man and his fate take on a different meaning for warriors. What you are going to do is make this world vanish, but you are going to remain somewhat yourself. This is the ultimate bastion of awareness, the one the new seers count on. They know that after they burn with consciousness, they somewhat retain the sense of being themselves. This street, like all others, leads to eternity. All you have to do is follow it in total silence. Intend the movement of your assemblage point. You must remember that intent begins with a command. If warriors are going to have an internal dialogue, they should have the proper dialogue. That's the detached manipulation of intent through sober commands. The manipulation of intent begins with a command given to oneself. The command is then repeated until it becomes the indescribable force's command, and then the assemblage point shifts accordingly the moment warriors reach inner silence. The fact that such a maneuver is possible is something of the most singular importance to seers. It means escaping the indescribable force by moving their assemblage points to a particular dreaming position called total freedom. The old seers discovered that it is possible to move the assemblage point to the limit of the known and keep it fixed there in a state of prime heightened awareness. From that position, they saw the feasibility of slowly shifting their assemblage points permanently to other positions beyond that limit, a stupendous feat, fraught with daring, but lacking sobriety, for they could never retract the movement of their assemblage points, or perhaps they never wanted to. Adventurous men, faced with the choice of dying in the world of ordinary affairs or dying in unknown worlds, will unavoidably choose the latter. The new seers, realizing that their predecessors had chosen merely to change the locale of their death, came to understand the futility of it all, the futility of struggling to control their fellow men, the futility of assembling other worlds, and above all, the futility of self-importance. One of the most fortunate decisions that the new seers made was never to allow their assemblage points to move permanently to any position other than heightened awareness. From that position, they actually resolved their dilemma of futility and found out that the solution is not simply to choose an alternate world in which to die, but to choose total consciousness, total freedom. By choosing total freedom, the new seers unwittingly continued in the tradition of their predecessors and became the quintessence of the death defiers. The new seers discovered that if the assemblage point is made to shift constantly to the confines of the unknown, but is made to return to a position at the limit of the known, then, when it is suddenly released, it moves like lightning across the entire cocoon of man, aligning all the emanations inside the cocoon at once. The new seers burn with the force of alignment, with the force of will, which they have turned into the force of intent through a life of impeccability. Intent is the alignment of all the amber emanations of awareness, so it is correct to say that total freedom means total awareness. Freedom is the indescribable force's gift to man. Unfortunately, very few men understand that all we need in order to accept such a magnificent gift is to have sufficient energy. If that's all we need, then by all means we must become misers of energy in order to accept the indescribable force's gift ourselves. At various times I've attempted to name my knowledge for your benefit. I've said that the most appropriate name is Nahualism, but that term is too obscure. Calling it simply knowledge makes it too vague, and to call it witchcraft is debasing. The mastery of intent is too abstract, and the search for total freedom too long and metaphorical. Finally, because I've been unable to find a more appropriate name, I've called it sorcery, although I admit it is not really accurate. I've given you different definitions of sorcery, but I have always maintained that definitions change as knowledge increases. Now you're in a position to appreciate a clearer definition. From where the average man stands, sorcery is nonsense, or an ominous mystery beyond his reach. And he is right, not because this is an absolute fact, but because the average man lacks the energy to deal with sorcery. Human beings are born with a finite amount of energy, an energy that is systematically deployed, beginning at the moment of birth, in order that it may be used most advantageously by the modality of the time. The modality of the time is the precise bundle of energy fields being perceived. I believe man's perception has changed through the ages. The actual time decides the mode. The time decides which precise bundle of energy fields, out of an incalculable number, are to be used. And handling the modality of the time, those few selected energy fields, takes all our available energy, leaving us nothing that would help us use any of the other energy fields. The average man, if he uses only the energy he has, can't perceive the worlds sorcerers do. To perceive them, sorcerers need to use a cluster of energy fields not ordinarily used. Naturally, if the average man is to perceive those worlds and understand sorcerers' perceptions, he must use the same cluster they have used. And this is just not possible, because all his energy is already deployed. Think of it this way. It isn't that as time goes by you're learning sorcery. Rather, what you're learning is to save energy. And this energy will enable you to handle some of the energy fields which are inaccessible to you now. And that is sorcery, the ability to use energy fields that are not employed in perceiving the ordinary world we know. Sorcery is a state of awareness. Sorcery is the ability to perceive something which ordinary perception cannot. Everything a teacher puts his apprentice through, each of the things he shows him, is only a device to convince him that there's more to us than meets the eye. We don't need anyone to teach us sorcery, because there is really nothing to learn. What we need is a teacher to convince us that there is incalculable power at our fingertips. What a strange paradox. Every warrior on the path of knowledge thinks at one time or another that he's learning sorcery. But all he's doing is allowing himself to be convinced of the power hidden in his being, and that he can reach it. I'm trying to convince you that you can reach that power. I went through the same thing, and I was as hard to convince as you are. Once we have reached it, it will by itself make use of energy fields which are available to us, but inaccessible. And that, as I have said, is sorcery. We begin then to see, that is, to perceive, something else, not as imagination, but as real and concrete. And then we begin to know without having to use words. And what any of us does with that increased perception, with that silent knowledge, depends on our own temperament. Now I'm going to give you a different and more precise definition of sorcery. In the universe, there is an unmeasurable, indescribable force which sorcerers call intent. Absolutely everything that exists in the entire cosmos is attached to intent by a connecting link. Sorcerers, warriors, are concerned with discussing, understanding, and employing that connecting link. They are especially concerned with cleaning it of the numbing effects brought about by the ordinary concerns of their everyday lives. Sorcery at this level could be defined as the procedure for cleaning one's connecting link to intent. The task of sorcery is to take this seemingly incomprehensible knowledge and make it understandable by the standards of awareness of everyday life. The guide in the lives of sorcerers is called the Nahual. The Nahual is a man or a woman with extraordinary energy, a teacher who has sobriety, endurance, stability. Someone sees C as a luminous sphere having four compartments, as if four luminous balls have been compressed together. Nahuals are responsible for supplying what sorcerers call the minimal chance, the awareness of one's connection with intent. Nahuals school their apprentices toward three areas of expertise: the mastery of awareness, the art of stalking, and the mastery of intent. These three areas of expertise are the three riddles sorcerers encounter in their search for knowledge. The mastery of awareness is the riddle of the mind, the perplexity sorcerers experience when they recognize the astounding mystery and scope of awareness and perception. The art of stalking is the riddle of the heart, the puzzlement sorcerers feel upon becoming aware of two things. First, that the world appears to us to be unalterably objective and factual because of peculiarities of our awareness and perception. Second, that if different peculiarities of perception come into play, the very things about the world that seem so unalterably objective and factual change. The mastery of intent is the riddle of the spirit, or the paradox of the abstract. Sorcerers' thoughts and actions projected beyond our human condition. The art of stalking and the mastery of intent depend upon instruction on the mastery of awareness, which consists of the following basic premises. 1. The universe is an infinite agglomeration of energy fields resembling threads of light. 2. These energy fields, called the eagles or the indescribable forces emanations, radiate from a source of inconceivable proportions, metaphorically called the eagle, the indescribable force. 3. Human beings are also composed of an incalculable number of the same thread-like energy fields. These indescribable forces emanations form an encased agglomeration that manifests itself as a ball of light the size of a person's body, with the arms extended laterally like a giant luminous egg. 4. Only a very small group of the energy fields inside this luminous ball are lit up by a point of intense brilliance located on the ball's surface. 5. Perception occurs when the energy fields in that small group immediately surrounding the point of brilliance extend their light to illuminate identical energy fields outside the ball. Since the only energy fields perceivable are those lit by the point of brilliance, that point is named the point where perception is assembled, or simply, the assemblage point. 6. The assemblage point can be moved from its usual position on the surface of the luminous ball to another position on the surface, or into the interior. Since the brilliance of the assemblage point can light up whatever energy field it comes in contact with, when it moves to a new position, it immediately brightens up new energy fields, making them perceivable. This perception is known as seeing. 7. When the assemblage point shifts, it makes possible the perception of an entirely different world, as objective and factual as the one we normally perceive. Sorcerers go into that other world to get energy, power, solutions to general and particular problems, or to face the unimaginable. 8. Intent is the pervasive force that causes us to perceive. We do not become aware because we perceive. Rather, we perceive as a result of the pressure and intrusion of intent. 9. The aim of sorcerers is to reach a state of total awareness in order to experience all the possibilities of perception available to man. This state of awareness even implies an alternative way of dying. A level of practical knowledge is included as part of teaching the mastery of awareness. On this practical level are taught the procedures necessary to move the assemblage point. The two great systems devised by the sorcerer seers of ancient times to accomplish this are dreaming, the control and utilization of dreams, and stalking, the control of behavior. Moving one's assemblage point is an essential maneuver that every sorcerer has to learn. Sorcerers consult their past in order to obtain a point of reference. Establishing a point of reference means getting a chance to examine intent, and nothing can give sorcerers a better view of intent than examining stories of other sorcerers battling to understand the same force. In sorcery, there are abstract cores, and then, based on those abstract cores, there are scores of sorcery stories about the Nahuals of our lineage battling to understand the spirit. The only way to know intent is to know it directly through a living connection that exists between intent and all sentient beings. Sorcerers call intent the indescribable, the spirit, the abstract. Every act performed by sorcerers, especially by the Nahuals, is either performed as a way to strengthen their link with intent, or as a response triggered by the link itself. Sorcerers, and specifically the Nahuals, therefore have to be actively and permanently on the lookout for manifestations of the spirit. Such manifestations are called gestures of the spirit, or more simply, indications or omens. When a sorcerer interprets an omen, he knows its exact meaning without having any notion of how he knows it. This is one of the bewildering effects of the connecting link with intent. Sorcerers have a sense of knowing things directly. How sure they are depends on the strength and clarity of their connecting link. The feeling everyone knows as intuition is the activation of our link with intent. And since sorcerers deliberately pursue the understanding and strengthening of that link, it could be said that they intuit everything, unerringly and accurately. Reading omens is commonplace for sorcerers. Mistakes happen only when personal feelings intervene and cloud the sorcerer's connecting link with intent. Otherwise, their direct knowledge is totally accurate and functional. The spirit manifests itself to a sorcerer, especially to a Nahual, at every turn. However, this is not the entire truth. The entire truth is that the spirit reveals itself to everyone with the same intensity and consistency, but only sorcerers, and Nahuals in particular, are attuned to such revelations. Nahuals make decisions. With no regard for the consequences, they take action or choose not to. Imposters ponder and become paralyzed. Sorcerers speak of sorcery as a magical, mysterious bird which has paused in its flight for a moment in order to give man hope and purpose. Sorcerers live under the wing of that bird, which they call the bird of wisdom, the bird of freedom. They nourish it with their dedication and impeccability. The bird of freedom can do only two things: take sorcerers along or leave them behind. Don't forget, even for an instant, that the bird of freedom has very little patience with indecision, and when it flies away, it never returns. When you have been afraid or upset, don't lie down to sleep. Sleep sitting up on a soft chair. To give your body healing rest, take long naps, lying on your stomach with your face turned to the left and your feet over the foot of the bed. In order to avoid being cold, put a soft pillow over your shoulders, away from your neck, and wear heavy socks, or just leave your shoes on. Follow my suggestions to the letter without bothering to believe or disbelieve me. Intent creates edifices before us and invites us to enter them. This is the way sorcerers understand what is happening around them. I want you to understand the underlying order of what I teach you. It means two things: both the edifice that intent manufactures in the blink of an eye and places in front of us to enter, and the signs it gives us so we won't get lost once we are inside. At a certain stage, an apprentice enters into heightened awareness all by himself. Heightened awareness is a mystery only for our reason. In practice, it's very simple. As with everything else, we complicate matters by trying to make the immensity that surrounds us reasonable. The manifestations of the spirit is the name for the first abstract core in the sorcery stories. Sorcerers know this as the edifice of intent, or the silent voice of the spirit, or the ultimate arrangement of the abstract. Ulterior means knowledge without words, outside our immediate comprehension, not beyond our ultimate possibilities for understanding. The ulterior arrangement of the abstract is knowledge without words, or the edifice of intent. The ulterior arrangement of the abstract is to know the abstract directly, without the intervention of language. The abstract is the element without which there could be no warrior's path, nor any warriors in search of knowledge. Warriors are incapable of feeling compassion because they no longer feel sorry for themselves. Without the driving force of self-pity, compassion is meaningless. For a warrior, everything begins and ends with himself. However, his contact with the abstract causes him to overcome his feeling of self-importance. Then the self becomes abstract and impersonal. Dreaming is a sorcerer's jet plane. They can create and project what sorcerers know as the dreaming body, or the other, and be in two distinct places at the same time. The spirit makes adjustments in our capacity for awareness. That's a statement of fact. You can say that it's an incomprehensible fact for the moment, but the moment will change. While we dream, the assemblage point moves very gently and naturally. Mental balance is nothing but the fixing of the assemblage point on one spot we're accustomed to. Dreams make that point move, and dreaming is used to control that natural movement. There are two different issues. One, the need to understand indirectly what the spirit is, and the other, to understand the spirit directly. Once you understand what the spirit is, the second issue will be resolved automatically, and vice versa. If the spirit speaks to you using its silent words, you will certainly know immediately what the spirit is. The difficulty is our reluctance to accept the idea that knowledge can exist without words to explain it. Accepting this proposition is not as easy as saying you accept it. The whole of humanity has moved away from the abstract. It takes years for an apprentice to be able to go back to the abstract, that is, to know that knowledge and language can exist independent of each other. The crux of our difficulty in going back to the abstract is our refusal to accept that we can know without words or even without thoughts. Knowledge and language are separate. I told you, there is no way to talk about the spirit because the spirit can only be experienced. Sorcerers try to explain this condition when they say that the spirit is nothing you can see or feel, but it's there, looming over us always. Sometimes it comes to some of us. Most of the time it seems indifferent. The spirit in many ways is a sort of wild animal. It keeps its distance from us until a moment when something entices it forward. It is then that the spirit manifests itself. For a sorcerer, an abstract is something with no parallel in the human condition. For a sorcerer, the spirit is an abstract simply because he knows it without words or without thoughts. It's an abstract because he can't conceive what the spirit is. Yet, without the slightest chance or desire to understand it, a sorcerer handles the spirit. He recognizes it, beckons it, entices it, becomes familiar with it, and expresses it with his acts. Think about the proposition that knowledge might be independent of language without bothering to understand it. Consider this. It was not the act of meeting me that mattered to you. The day I met you, you met the abstract. But since you couldn't talk about it, you didn't notice it. Sorcerers meet the abstract without thinking about it, or seeing it, or touching it, or feeling its presence. The second abstract core of the sorcery stories is called the knock of the spirit. The first core, the manifestations of the spirit, is the edifice that intent builds and places before a sorcerer, then invites him to enter. It is the edifice of intent seen by a sorcerer. The knock of the spirit is the same edifice seen by the beginner who is invited, or rather, forced to enter. A nahual can be a conduit for the spirit only after the spirit has manifested its willingness to be used, either almost imperceptibly or with outright commands. After a lifetime of practice, sorcerers, nahuals in particular, know if the spirit is inviting them to enter the edifice being flaunted before them. They have learned to discipline their connecting links to intent. So they are always forewarned. Always know what the spirit has in store for them. Progress along the sorcerer's path is, in general, a drastic process, the purpose of which is to bring one's connecting link to order. In order to revive that link, sorcerers need a rigorous, fierce purpose, a special state of mind called unbending intent. An apprentice is someone who is striving to clear and revive his connecting link with the spirit. Once the link is revived, he is no longer an apprentice, but until that time, in order to keep going, he needs a fierce purpose, which, of course, he doesn't have. So he allows the nahual to provide the purpose, and to do that, he has to relinquish his individuality. That's the difficult part. Volunteers are not welcome in the sorcerer's world because they already have a purpose of their own, which makes it particularly hard for them to relinquish their individuality. If the sorcerer's world demands ideas and actions contrary to the volunteer's purpose, volunteers simply refuse to change. Reviving an apprentice's link is a nahual's most challenging and intriguing work, and one of his biggest headaches, too. Depending, of course, on the apprentice's personality, the designs of the spirit are either sublimely simple or the most complex labyrinths. The power of man is incalculable. Death exists only because we have intended it since the moment of our birth. The intent of death can be suspended by making the assemblage point change positions. I have given you different versions of what the sorcery task consists. It would not be presumptuous of me to disclose that, from the spirit's point of view, the task consists of clearing our connecting link with it. The edifice that intent flaunts before us is, then, a clearinghouse, within which we find not so much the procedures to clear our connecting link as the silent knowledge that allows the clearing process to take place. Without that silent knowledge, no process could work, and all we would have would be an indefinite sense of needing something. The events unleashed by sorcerers as a result of silent knowledge are so simple and yet so abstract that sorcerers decided long ago to speak of those events only in symbolic terms. The manifestations and the knock of the spirit are examples. For instance, a description of what takes place during the initial meeting between a Nahual and a prospective apprentice from the sorcerer's point of view would be absolutely incomprehensible. It would be nonsense to explain that the Nahual, by virtue of his lifelong experience, is focusing something we couldn't imagine, his second attention, the increased awareness gained through sorcery training, on his invisible connection with some indefinable abstract. He is doing this to emphasize and clarify someone else's invisible connection with that indefinable abstract. Each of us is barred from silent knowledge by natural barriers specific to each individual. The most impregnable of my barriers was the drive to disguise my complacency as independence. We as average men do not know, nor will we ever know, that it is something utterly real and functional, our connecting link with intent, which gives us our hereditary preoccupation with fate. During our active lives, we never have the chance to go beyond the level of mere preoccupation, because since time immemorial, the lull of daily affairs has made us drowsy. It is only when our lives are nearly over that our hereditary preoccupation with fate begins to take on a different character. It begins to make us see through the fog of daily affairs. Unfortunately, this awareness always comes hand in hand with loss of energy caused by aging, when we have no more strength left to turn our preoccupation into a pragmatic and positive discovery. At this point, all there is left is an amorphous, piercing anguish, a longing for something indescribable, a simple anger at having missed out. The third abstract core is called the trickery of the spirit, or the trickery of the abstract, or stalking oneself, or dusting the link. Perception is the hinge for everything man is or does, and perception is ruled by the location of the assemblage point. Therefore, if that point changes positions, man's perception of the world changes accordingly. The sorcerer who knows exactly where to place his assemblage point can become anything he wants. The art of stalking is learning all the quirks of your disguise. To learn them so well, no one will know you are disguised. For that, you need to be ruthless, cunning, patient, and sweet. Stalking is an art applicable to everything. There are four steps to learning it: ruthlessness, cunning, patience, and sweetness. Ruthlessness should not be harshness. Cunning should not be cruelty. Patience should not be negligence. And sweetness should not be foolishness. These four steps have to be practiced and perfected until they are so smooth they are unnoticeable. Knowing what intent is means that one can, at any time, explain that knowledge or use it. The Nahual, by the force of his position, is obliged to command his knowledge in this manner. A warrior needs focus. Heightened awareness is like a springboard. From it, one can jump into infinity. When the assemblage point is dislodged, it either becomes lodged again at a position very near its customary one, or continues moving on into infinity. People have no idea of the strange power we carry within ourselves. At this moment, for instance, you have the means to reach infinity. Egomania is a real tyrant. We must work ceaselessly to dethrone it. You can learn to be ruthless, cunning, patient, and sweet. Ruthlessness, cunning, patience, and sweetness are the essence of stalking. They are the basics that, with all their ramifications, have to be taught in careful, meticulous steps. Sorcerer's behavior is always impeccable. Sorcerers, though, have an ulterior purpose for their acts, which has nothing to do with personal gain. The fact that they enjoy their acts does not count as gain. Rather, it is a condition of their character. The average man acts only if there is a chance for profit. Warriors say they act not for profit, but for the spirit. We have no thought of personal gain. Our acts are dictated by impeccability. We can't be angry or disillusioned. The two masteries, stalking and intent, are the crowning glory of sorcerers old and new. Stalking is the beginning. Before anything can be attempted on the warrior's path, warriors must learn to stalk. Next, they must learn to intend, and only then can they move their assemblage point at will. Words are tremendously powerful and important, and are the magical property of whoever has them. Sorcerers have a rule of thumb. They say that the deeper the assemblage point moves, the greater the feeling that one has knowledge and no words to explain it. Sometimes the assemblage point of average persons can move without a known cause and without their being aware of it, except that they become tongue-tied, confused, and evasive. The very first principle of stalking is that a warrior stalks himself. He stalks himself ruthlessly, cunningly, patiently, and sweetly. Stalking is the art of using behavior in novel ways for specific purposes. Normal human behavior in the world of everyday life is routine. Any behavior that breaks from routine causes an unusual effect on our total being. That unusual effect is what sorcerers seek because it is cumulative. The sorcerer seers of ancient times, through their seeing, first noticed that unusual behavior produced a tremor in the assemblage point. They soon discovered that if unusual behavior was practiced systematically and directed wisely, it eventually forced the assemblage point to move. The real challenge for those sorcerer seers was finding a system of behavior that was neither petty nor capricious, but that combined the morality and the sense of beauty which differentiates sorcerer seers from plain witches. Anyone who succeeds in moving his assemblage point to a new position is a sorcerer, and from that new position he can do all kinds of good or bad things to his fellow men. Being a sorcerer, therefore, can be like being a cobbler or a baker. The quest of sorcerer seers is to go beyond that stand, and to do that they need morality and beauty. For sorcerers, stalking is the foundation on which everything else they do is built. It is the art of controlled folly. Sorcerers say that heightened awareness is the portal of intent, and they use it as such. Think about it. You must reach the point where you understand what intent is, and above all, you must understand that that knowledge cannot be turned into words. That knowledge is there for everyone. It is there to be felt, to be used, but not to be explained. One can come into it by changing levels of awareness. Therefore, heightened awareness is an entrance. But even the entrance cannot be explained. One can only make use of it. The natural knowledge of intent is available to anyone, but the command of it belongs to those who probe it. Sorcerers believe that until the very moment of the spirit's descent, any of us could walk away from the spirit, but not afterwards. The fourth abstract core is called the descent of the spirit, or being moved by intent. It is the full brunt of the spirit's descent. The fourth abstract core is an act of revelation. The spirit reveals itself to us. Sorcerers describe it as the spirit lying in ambush and then descending on us, its prey. Sorcerers say that the spirit's descent is always shrouded. It happens, and yet it seems not to have happened at all. There is a threshold that once crossed permits no retreat. Every sorcerer should have a clear memory of crossing that threshold, so he can remind himself of the new state of his perceptual potential. One does not have to be an apprentice of sorcery to reach this threshold, and the only difference between an average man and a sorcerer in such cases is what each emphasizes. A sorcerer emphasizes crossing this threshold and uses the memory of it as a point of reference. An average man does not cross the threshold and does his best to forget all about it. Sorcerers say that the fourth abstract core happens when the spirit cuts our chains of self-reflection. Cutting our chains is marvelous, but also very undesirable, for nobody wants to be free. What a strange feeling to realize that everything we think, everything we say, depends on the position of the assemblage point. The secret of our chains is that they imprison us, but by keeping us pinned down on our comfortable spot of self-reflection, they defend us from the onslaughts of the unknown. Once our chains are cut, we are no longer bound by the concerns of the daily world. We are still in the daily world, but we don't belong there anymore. In order to belong, we must share the concerns of people. And without chains, we can't. What distinguishes normal people is that we share a metaphorical dagger, the concerns of our self-reflection. With this dagger, we cut ourselves and bleed, and the job of our chains of self-reflection is to give us the feeling that we are bleeding together, that we are sharing something wonderful, our humanity. But if we were to examine it, we would discover that we are bleeding alone, that we are not sharing anything, that all we are doing is toying with our manageable, unreal, man-made reflection. Sorcerers are no longer in the world of daily affairs because they are no longer prey to their self-reflection. The universe is made up of energy fields which defy description or scrutiny. They resemble filaments of ordinary light, except that light is lifeless compared to the indescribable force's emanations, which exude awareness. Normal perception occurs when intent, which is pure energy, lights up a portion of the luminous filaments inside our cocoon, and at the same time brightens a long extension of the same luminous filaments extending into infinity outside our cocoon. Extraordinary perception, seeing, occurs when, by the force of intent, a different cluster of energy fields energizes and lights up. When a crucial number of energy fields are lit up inside the luminous cocoon, a sorcerer is able to see the energy fields themselves. Awareness takes place when the energy fields inside our luminous cocoon are aligned with the same energy fields outside. Only a very small portion of the total number of luminous filaments inside the cocoon are energized, while the rest remain unaltered. The filaments do not need to be aligned to be lit up, because the ones inside our cocoon are the same as those outside. Whatever energizes them is definitely an independent force. We can't call it awareness, because awareness is the glow of the energy fields being lit up. The force that lights up the fields is named will. Will is the force that keeps the indescribable force's emanation separated and is not only responsible for our awareness, but also for everything in the universe. This force has total consciousness, and it springs from the very fields of energy that make the universe. Intent is a more appropriate name for it than will. In the long run, however, the name proves disadvantageous because it does not describe its overwhelming importance nor the living connection it has with everything in the universe. Our great collective flaw is that we live our lives completely disregarding that connection. The busyness of our lives, our relentless interests, concerns, hopes, frustrations, and fears take precedence, and on a day-to-day basis we are unaware of being linked to everything else. Being cast out of the Garden of Eden sounds like an allegory for losing our silent knowledge, our knowledge of intent. Sorcery, then, is a going back to the beginning, a return to paradise. The spirit is the force that sustains the universe. Intent is not something one might use or command or move in any way. Nevertheless, one could use it, command it, or move it as one desires. This contradiction is the essence of sorcery. To fail to understand it has brought generations of sorcerers unimaginable pain and sorrow. Modern-day Nahuals, in an effort to avoid paying this inexorable price in pain, have developed a code of behavior called the Warrior's Way, or the Impeccable Action, which prepares sorcerers by enhancing their sobriety and thoughtfulness. Sorcerers concern themselves exclusively with the capacity that their individual connecting link with intent has to set them free to light the fire from within. All modern-day sorcerers have to struggle fiercely to gain soundness of mind. Sorcery is an attempt to reestablish our knowledge of intent and regain use of it without succumbing to it. The abstract cores of the sorcerer stories are shades of realization, degrees of our being aware of intent. It does not matter what our specific fate is, as long as we face it with ultimate abandon. A warrior is on permanent guard against the roughness of human behavior. A warrior is magical and ruthless, a maverick with the most refined taste and manners, whose worldly task is to sharpen, yet disguise, his cutting edges so that no one would be able to suspect his ruthlessness. Sorcerers constantly stalk themselves. The sensation of being bottled up is experienced by every human being. It is a reminder of our existing connection with intent. For sorcerers, this sensation is even more acute, precisely because their goal is to sensitize their connecting link until they can make it function at will.